Other, 002703, Alan Hoffman et al. Versus Wisconsin Electric Power Company. Representing the Wisconsin Electric Power Company is Attorney Owen Thomas Armstrong of Quarles and Brady. Then have Lynn R. Laufenberg representing Alan and Beverly Hoffman, arguing for 15 minutes, and Scott Lawrence also representing Alan and Beverly Hoffman, arguing for 15 minutes. Mr. Armstrong gets 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Armstrong, you may proceed.
May it please the court, this is a stray voltage case, and we submit that the controlling issue in this case is whether in Wisconsin the Public Service Commission or juries in the context of nuisance or negligence actions determine what is a harmful level of stray voltage. We submit that the legislature has answered that question, delegating to the Public Service Commission in section 196.857 the duty, the mandatory duty, to establish a stray voltage program. And among other things, the legislature has directed the Public Service Commission to regulate stray voltage in this state. The Public Service Commission has done precisely that. In dockets 106 and 115, which were the culmination of countless, I believe, 40 to 50 public and technical hearings, the Public Service Commission has issued findings of fact and conclusions of law pertaining to the subject of stray voltage. These hearings took place under the auspices of section 196.28, which are hearings that are initiated by the Public Service Commission pursuant to statute. Public notice is given with respect to these hearings. Interested parties are invited to attend and to submit evidence. The Public Service Commission then has issued orders, which under section 196.40 of the statutes are lawful and reasonable unless a court determines otherwise under section 227.57. And this court has held that findings of fact, such as are contained in dockets 106 and 115, constitute a determination subject to review under chapter 227 and are lawful and reasonable under section 196.40 unless the court determines otherwise. In that case is City of St. Francis versus PSC 270 with 91, 1955. The critical findings of fact that have been made by the PSC that determine the outcome of this case, we submit, are as follows. That stray voltage is current flowing through a cow tested at what are called cow contact points. These are points, usually metallic objects, that a cow can contact in its environment. And stray voltage is current flowing through the cow. The PSC has also found that it's the current flowing through an animal that has the potential to cause an adverse effect, whether it be a loss of milk production or other undesirable behavior in a cow. It is the current that flows through the cow that causes that adverse consequence. And that finding is contained in our appendix at page 18. It's docket 106, and that finding was reaffirmed in docket 115. In order to determine the magnitude of the current flowing through the cow, the PSC has also adopted what's called a specific and standardized cow contact test protocol, consisting of numerous steps that a utility is to employ or a stray voltage analysis team to determine whether there are problematic voltages flowing through the cow. That finding was also made in docket 106, which is at page 20 through 21 of our appendix, again reaffirmed in docket 115. That uniform test was also directed by the legislature. The PSC in 196.857 was ordered by the legislature to establish and administer a standardized test, and it has done so. And perhaps the most critical finding of the PSC for purposes of this case is that the PSC has found, after reviewing all of the scientific evidence, hearing testimony from all interested parties, that there is a scientific consensus about the effects of stray voltage upon cows, and that 2 milliamperes of current, as found in this cow contact test, is a preventive level below the point where moderate avoidance behavior is likely to occur. This 2 milliampere standard, according to the PSC, is well below where a cow's behavior or milk production would be harmed. The PSC has concluded that because this is a dairy state and because we want to take every precaution to head off any possible harm, this 2 milliampere standard has been established as the benchmark for the potential harm to cows.
Counsel, when you say likely to occur, that's so that is the standard. Is that an absolute? It absolutely isn't going to occur.
But that's correct, Your Honor. And I would refer the court again to our appendix. This is the docket 115 that's contained in our appendix at pages 100 and 121. It's according to the PSC, the 2 milliampere standard is a conservative preventive level of concern well below where a cow's behavior or milk production would be harmed. That statement we maintain, Your Honor, is categorical. It is unqualified. It is an absolute standard.
Are you then saying that unless you can show that the stray voltage is above that 2M mark, that no jury can find negligence or nuisance, and that there should have been a directed verdict?
Well, I would only alter that by saying that no jury could find causation, Your Honor. I think the utility may take steps to prevent ever getting to that 2 milliampere level. And it may be that a jury could find that under a given set of circumstances, a utility should take certain measures to ensure that we're not going to exceed that 2 milliampere level. However, it is a causation threshold, and I would agree with Your Honor that a directed verdict would be warranted unless there is evidence introduced by the plaintiff that there is evidence of 2 milliamperes or more of current flowing through the cow-to-cow contact.
Suppose they can only show one.
Well, under the PSCs, the PSC has found, and it's a finding of fact which we maintain constitutes law in Wisconsin, that unless 2 milliamperes can be shown, the cow is not being harmed.
Okay, so if they can't show 2, then there's a directed verdict.
That's correct, Your Honor.
They show on what grounds? That there's no negligence? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I think in order to establish causation, a plaintiff obviously is going to have to show that his or her conduct
caused it. We're off negligence.
We're off negligence. That's right. I think obviously negligence comes into this because a reasonable utility would likely not foresee any problem if what you're getting, as we did in this case, readings of a tenth of a milliampere or 1/20th of what the PSC has found necessary to even raise the problem. So I doubt very much whether a jury could find negligence, but certainly a jury could not find causation.
Because of these findings of the PSC.
Because of the findings of the PSC, Your Honor, that's correct.
And if there was another scientist who said it is causation here.
Well, another scientist, our position in this case, Your Honor, is that a plaintiff and his experts cannot contradict the findings of the PSC, that unless they're overturned pursuant to a Chapter 227 proceeding, or unless there's an attack on the constitutionality, which there has not been, which is not ripe in this case, and I know there's reference in the plaintiff's brief to perhaps a taking without due process. That issue is not before the court. These are lawfully enacted findings of the PSC, which under authorities of this court constitute have the force and effect of law. And I refer the court to the Thompson case, which is 242 WIS 591, Bent 213 WIS 635, and Scholes 260 WIS 541. Those cases all stand for the proposition that a jury and even a municipality may not enact or make findings that contradict duly enacted findings of the PSC. And there is no doubt that these are duly enacted findings of the PSC. The PSC, again, has been directed by the legislature to regulate the subject of stray voltage, an extremely complicated matter. I think we can all agree. And the PSC has done that by making those findings that I've referred to. They've defined what stray voltage is. They have told utilities how to detect stray voltage. And they have informed utilities and others what the harmful level of stray voltage is, what they have to be concerned about. They have told utilities without qualification that unless we are obtaining 2 milliamperes of current, there is no causation of harm. And they've also told utilities, even if they get a 1 milliampere reading, they have to take action to prevent harm from occurring. In this case, it is undisputed that there is absolutely no evidence of any cow contact voltages coming anywhere near 2 milliamperes. In fact, there's no evidence that there was any cow contact voltage coming anywhere near 1 milliampere. I believe the plaintiffs in their brief cite one instance where one of their experts purportedly found a voltage reading over 1 milliampere. It's undisputed in the record that that was done without a resistor. It was done contrary to the cow contact test protocol prescribed by the PSC. And I think by that expert's own admission, it was an aberration because he couldn't reproduce the results.
Is this the same argument you're making at pages 49 to 52 of your brief? It's the blue brief.
Let's see.
A lot of green briefs.
Page 49 to 52, Your Honor. That's correct, although that's in the context of the Kemp case, which the plaintiffs have relied upon. This court in Kemp held that when the PSC enacts a conduct standard, a safety standard, that in some circumstances that only amounts to a minimum standard, and that under the restatement of torts, that minimum standard does not necessarily express the duty of due care under common law. This is not such a standard. This is an absolute unqualified standard stating that in no circumstances are cows subjected to harm when we have readings under 2 milliamperes. And in this case, as I pointed out, we have readings far 20 times less than 2 milliamperes. So it's our position that the Kemp case does not control here. To make an analogy, if the PSC, for example, had simply stated that the utility would have to take some form of corrective action if there's a reading over 1 milliampere, arguably that would be a type of minimum due care under Kemp. But this is not such a standard. This is a causation threshold.
What is the highest level of stray voltage that the plaintiffs proved?
Your Honor, I believe it was in the area of 1 to 2 tenths of a milliampere. I believe there may have been some evidence of that it may have gone as high as 0.5 milliamps on one occasion. Never did the plaintiffs establish anything near 1 milliampere when utilizing the cow contact test protocol.
Well, why do you say this is a stray voltage case when I don't see the term stray voltage in the special verdict questions?
Well, I think it's conceded that what the plaintiffs attempted to show was that this was a stray voltage case. I think it's always, the jury was not asked that. The jury was asked whether WEPCO was negligent in the way it distributed electricity. And the proof the plaintiffs established at trial attempted to show that there was excess current being distributed causing harm to the plaintiff's cows. That was their proof. And the defense to that, and the motions for
directed verdict and the motions for post-trial motions all pointed out to the trial court that the plaintiffs had failed in their proof because they were unable to establish any current, even approximating 2 milliamperes or even 1 milliampere of current as tested by the Cal Contact Test Protocol. The plaintiffs in the case try to avoid the label of stray voltage in this case by saying, this really isn't a stray voltage case. This is a non-traditional stray voltage case, which is governed by Docket 108, which is also consists of findings of fact by the PSC. Docket 108 took up the question, or took up the argument as advanced by some, that current in the cow's atmosphere, underneath the floor or in their immediate environment, could have an adverse impact upon a cow, and that the PSC had not ruled upon that. That is simply untrue. First of all, we point out that the plaintiff's own experts testified that the current had to reach the cow in order to affect it. More importantly, the PSC, in taking up Docket 108, specifically said, after looking at the evidence, we're not convinced that anything needs to be done here. We are not going to modify any of our prior conclusions about stray voltage, which are that the current has to flow through the cow in order to affect the cow. The PSC said it would not adopt any notion that current in the environment may affect the cow. And we would point out that in subsequent publications by PSC staff that are contained at page 261 of our appendix, and again at 267 of the appendix, if earth current is going to affect animals on farms, it will have to be manifested as a step potential measurable via a special cow contact setup. The same level of concern applies to this measurement as to any measurement at cow contact points inside a barn. What the PSC has instructed utilities is that no matter where the current's coming from, their prior findings in dockets 106 and 115 control, that you have to have a 2 milliampere level in order to establish causation or a 1 milliampere level in order to require the utilities to take some action, regardless of the source of the current, that these earth currents do not cause harm to cows. It is the current flowing through the cow that causes harm.
Why couldn't a jury find that these non-traditional, not getting my terms right, the non-traditional stray voltage was evidence of negligence?
Well, again, Your Honor, I think in terms of evidence of negligence, the issue becomes one of foreseeability. And what the PSC has told utilities is that they are not adopting the notion that non-traditional stray voltage can cause harm to cows. Current has to pass through a cow in order to cause harm. That's what the utilities have been told by the PSC. So frankly, it's unforeseeable. And secondly, Your Honor, in the context of this case, the evidence the jury heard from the plaintiff's own experts was that the current did have to flow through the cow, that it wasn't simply current in the environment. The Minnesota Science Advisor study, which was referenced by the PSC in Docket 108, also concluded that there is no scientific basis that cows can be harmed by current in their environment. And perhaps most importantly, Your Honor, if juries were able to find negligence in a situation where there is no current passing through the cow, it renders all of the PSC findings a nullity. Because what it then says to utilities is, you can conduct your tests, you can make your findings of what current is flowing through the cow, but they're meaningless because the cow still may be being adversely affected no matter what these readings show, no matter what the standardized test protocol.
They're not meaningless, counsel. They're simply to be weighed by the jury with all the other evidence, including expert evidence to the contrary.
Well, the position is that the non-traditional stray voltage is something that is contrary to PSC findings. The PSC has found, and has not changed its finding, that a current has to flow through the cow in order to adversely affect it. And if a jury is bound by that PSC finding, as we maintain it is, a jury cannot be permitted to weigh that evidence and to contradict that finding. That's the essence of this liability case. Can a jury trump findings made by the PSC? which this court has held have the force and effect of law. Can a jury nullify state law? And I think the answer to that question is self-evident. I'm not aware of this court or any other court sanctioning a jury's nullification of state law. And that's what we would have in that particular case. If a jury was free to find that you don't need cow contact, that you don't need current flowing through the cow, that a cow can be harmed by any stray voltage reading, then there's nothing left of the PSC findings. And frankly, there's nothing left of 196.857, in which the legislature has directed the PSC to address these matters and to regulate them, because then there'd be no regulation at all.
One of the amicus briefs raises the issue of the applicability of the filed rape doctrine or filed
yes, Your Honor.
Doctrine. Do you have a position on that?
Your Honor, I will admit, as was contained in one of the other amicus briefs, that that was not argued in either the trial court or the Court of Appeals. It first surfaced, it was contained as an affirmative defense in the answer of WEPCO. However, that issue was not addressed by the trial court or the Court of Appeals. That does not mean that this court could not address it if it chooses to do so. And I believe that the argument expressed, I believe, in the amicus brief filed by the Foley and Lardner law firm accurately states the tariff doctrine. Basically, the problem we have here is if we accept the notion that certain WEPCO customers or utility customers can demand a change in their service, even, no matter what the stray voltage reading, if they can convince a jury that their cows are being harmed by whatever, a tenth of a milliampere or no milliamperes, they then would be able to demand service that other customers are not entitled to. The tariff doctrine says that we will provide service to you according to the PSC rules. And that is precisely what's occurred in this case. That is the one milliampere level of concern. All of the PSC findings are incorporated into the tariff doctrine. So I would maintain, Your Honor, even though it was not argued, admittedly, in the trial court or the Court of Appeals, if the court chooses to address the issue, I believe the argument contained in the Foley and Lardner brief is accurate. I see my time is waning. I just want to briefly address another very significant issue, if I could, and that is the remedy in this case.
Before you get onto that, I understood the issue coming in this morning to be whether or not compliance with the Wisconsin Public Service Commission's stray voltage orders precludes a finding of common law negligence. Is my understanding wrong as to that issue? As to the statement of that issue?
I would say, I would phrase it slightly differently, Your Honor. I don't think it's compliance with the standard. This isn't a compliance. It's not a standard of care case. The issue in this case is whether a jury in Wisconsin, or juries consisting of laypersons, can override the PSC finding of fact that cows cannot be adversely affected by stray voltage unless you reach a certain threshold.
Well, let me give you a very simple, maybe even a simple-minded example here. We've got all kinds of safety statutes in this state and statutes dealing with speed limits.
Yes, sir.
For instance. And the Department of Transportation can set speed limits around the state, and they set them at 55, et cetera. But as you know, simply because a person is traveling within the speed limit, 55, does not preclude a finding of common law negligence.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, why is that different from this?
That is a conduct standard, Your Honor. It says that if you engage in certain conduct, if you violate that standard, you're negligent per se. Compliance with that is only evidence of due care. We're not talking about due care. Let me see if I can rephrase the hypothetical or the analogy. Let's assume that the legislature has said that if you drive at 10 miles an hour, nobody could be injured. That means that you cannot harm anyone. I mean, that's a bizarre finding. But nevertheless, that's exactly what's occurred here. The PSC, after all of these hearings and looking at all of the evidence, hearing all of the testimony, has determined that cows cannot be harmed unless a certain threshold is reached. It's a causation standard. It's not a standard of care.
Okay, what if they're wrong? What if 10 experts, all of whom are recognized as perhaps the best people in the field, say that the PFC is wrong and come into trial and testify? You seem to be saying that notwithstanding that kind of evidence, there would still be a directed verdict for the utilities.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's true with any legislation. Somebody can always come in and say the legislature's wrong in making a particular finding. There are two ways to go about that. Either the finding can be attacked because it's unconstitutional, or there was some defect in the way that the legislature enacted the particular law, or in this case, the administrative agency. Secondly, you can always go to the legislature. You can go to the administrative agency and ask for an additional hearing to present additional evidence. You can have that reviewed. A court may review these findings, Your Honor. In this case, nobody took this up to a court for review under Chapter 227.
The problem I have is, what kind of findings are we talking about? You talk about that these are legislative-type findings and that the people are bound by the legislature. I don't see something comparable in the legislature. Here was looking at Appendix 13. Here was an investigation on the Commission's own motion into the practices, policies, and procedures concerning stray voltage for electric distribution. It talks about the proceedings. Then they make findings of fact. This was not a contested hearing. It was not a... It's a legislative type of hearing. But what kind of findings are these that we're bound by them, or that the jury is bound by them?
Well, Your Honor, this is a determination made by the PSC, and under Section 196.40 of the statute.
Right, and that they were supposed to do a program, stray voltage.
Well, no, that's 196.857. Yes, they've been directed by the legislature to regulate stray voltage. And this is a regulation of stray voltage. I'm not sure that the PSC could regulate stray voltage if, in each case, any jury in this state is free to determine what is a harmful level of stray voltage. I'm not sure how one could go about regulating a matter unless one determines what is a dangerous level or what do we do under certain circumstances. This is, when you say it's not a contested case hearing, there were positions advanced in these hearings. The committee heard evidence from a number of parties.
Just like the legislature does.
Similar to that, but perhaps a little more vociferous in this case, because I think all of the interested parties did testify. There were some 40 hearings. My point is that a determination made by an administrative agency such as the PSC is lawful and reasonable on its face unless there is an appeal under Chapter 227, specifically 227.57. So we don't have to have a legislative finding. Administrative agencies can be delegated legislative power. And that's what's occurred here. The PSC has been delegated the power by the legislature to establish, among other things, what is a harmful level of stray voltage for Wisconsin. That's what the PSC has done specifically. That finding was subject to review in the Circuit Court, in the Court of Appeals, and by this court if necessary. Nobody bothered to take this up on appeal under Chapter 227.
How would that procedurally occur if this was initiated on the PSC's own motion?
Under Section 196.28, Your Honor, there is an appeal procedure. It's governed by the typical 227 procedure. It's contained actually at the end of the, for example, in Appendix 63, Notice of Appeal Rights. To comply with the requirements of 227.48, notice is given that a party aggrieved by the foregoing decision has the right and option to file a petition for rehearing as provided in 227.49 within 20 days. Notice is further given that a person aggrieved by the foregoing decision has a right and option to file a petition for judicial review as provided in 227.53. So like any other administrative determination under Chapter 227, a party has a right to appeal the administrative finding to the Circuit Court, and of course then, if necessary, to the Court of Appeals.
So these findings and the order that emanated from it have the legal status of administrative rules?
That's correct. Yes, it's an administrative determination, which I submit has the force and effect of law until a court overturns it.
Mr. Armstrong, is there any credible evidence to support this verdict?
Well, Your Honor, we submit there is no credible evidence to support this verdict under the rules and decisions of the PSC. Absolutely none. Now, if we ignore the PSC entirely if the PSC decision is merely evidence, as was argued by the plaintiffs in this case, well, then a jury would be, assuming the plaintiff's experts were competent to testify, and I know one of the amicus briefs has addressed that, but assuming that they are, these experts said that the PSC was wrong. In fact, plaintiff's counsel told the jury in this case that if you accept what the PSC says, our clients are going to lose. Plaintiff's counsel asked this jury to ignore what the PSC did because for a variety of reasons, among other things, that the PSC was allegedly in the pockets of the utilities. Counsel exhorted this jury to disregard the PSC findings. Now, if we do disregard them, then we do have their experts stating it doesn't matter what the cow contact test shows, doesn't matter what the level of concern is, doesn't matter whether the current passes through the cow or perhaps not. The fact is, we are able to show harm because we've eliminated, to a reasonable degree of probability, non-electrical causes. So, jury, we're asking you to find that this minimal amount of current as disclosed by the cow contact test doesn't matter. It still harmed the Hoffman's cows. That's what caused the adverse behavior in the cows. That's what caused the loss of milk production. This is an extremely complicated area, again, because there are so many causes for what occurred on this farm. There are a multitude of causes. Electricity is only one of them. And electricity is an extremely complicated subject, and I believe that's exactly why the legislature has delegated to the PSC the duty to regulate stray voltage in Wisconsin, which includes the establishment of a harm threshold. And that's what the PSC has done. It has determined, after reviewing all the evidence, that cows cannot be harmed. And I would add, in terms of the negligence finding, Your Honor, a regulated utility, I think, is duty-bound to accept the findings made by the entity that regulates it. Even if these findings did not have the force and effect of law, what we have here is we have a utility that's being told by the agency that regulates it, cows are harmed by current passing through them. You apply the cow contact test to determine the level, and that cows are not harmed if your reading is less than 2 milliamperes. I believe that the utilities can reasonably rely upon those findings of the PSC, that they're not duty-bound to reject them. And we'd have to find that a utility is duty-bound to reject those findings of the PSC if we're to establish foreseeability. In this case, how could WEPCO foresee that its current, that its electrical system was causing harm to the Hoffman cows when we're getting readings 10 times less than what the PSC has told them causes harm? I believe as a matter of law, the utility is entitled to rely upon the findings of the PSC in that regard, the regulating entity. If they disregard findings of the PSC, they're subjecting themselves to treble damages.
No one's arguing here that they disregard them. I don't think anybody's arguing that you've got to stay within 2 milliamperes.
Well, I do believe the plaintiffs argued exactly that, Your Honor, to the jury in this case. They're saying that WEPCO should have rejected the PSC finding, that WEPCO was negligent for concluding that its electrical system was not harming these cows because we're getting a reading of 1 to 2 to 3 milliamperes of current.
Well, counsel, if they're standing there measuring the amount of amperes going through the cow and it reads under 2 million and the cow is meanwhile falling over dead, there's something wrong.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, I think under that hypothetical, something is wrong.
Right.
But as I wanted to emphasize a moment ago, there are many
cows. What you're saying is that the utilities are free to ignore reality as long as they have a favorable PSC rule.
Not at all, Your Honor. We're not ignoring reality here. Again, the reality is that there are almost an infinite number of causes for cow conduct as displayed by the plaintiff's cows in this case. I mean almost an infinite number, and they've been addressed in their briefs. You know, there's hygiene, there's nutrition. There are so many causes that could cause a cow to fall over, as you put it, including perhaps chronic wasting disease, for all we know. But the fact is, when a cow falls over, in order for a utility to conclude that its electricity is contributing to that falling over, it's going to have some meaningful cow contact readings. That's what the PSC is telling the utility. The utility is saying if you're getting readings like as such as we are getting in the Hoffman case, it's not the electrical system that's the cause of the problem. And if it's not the electrical system that's the cause of the problem, how can a utility be held negligent for not redoing its electrical system, putting in a new system? The fact is the utility is reasonable in its conduct because it's relying upon what the PSC has told them about harmful levels of stray voltage.
And the PSC, from the findings that I read, was operating under 196.26, not under 196.857. Is that right?
Under 196.28 and 196.26.
That's what they were operating.
Yes, they did state that jurisdictionally, because 196.857 does not provide the mechanism for hearings.
That's right. So
procedurally, in order to implement 196.857, they have to, I believe, hold a hearing under 196.28, which they did.
Oh, just establish.
Getting to maybe a legal argument. Obviously, in the absence of the PSC regs here, the Hoffmans would have a common law right to sue and collect for damages, for negligence, correct?
They certainly have a common law right to sue, and obviously if they...
So you are claiming, it seems to me anyway, that common law right has been overridden by the legislature. It's been taken away. My understanding of Hornbook law is that if that is in fact the case, if the legislature is going to take away common law rights, they must do so clearly and unequivocally. Now, what do you point to in the legislative history here that shows clearly and unequivocally that the legislature intended to supplant common law rights with PFC regulations?
Your Honor, I don't think that any immunity has been granted utilities. I don't think that there's been any diminution of a plaintiff's right to sue a utility if the plaintiff can establish that the utility acted negligently in the way it dispensed its electricity. The issue here is one of causation. And what the legislature has done, what the legislature has delegated to the PSC, because it's necessary in this area, is to make findings regulating stray voltage, which includes establishing a level of what constitutes harmful stray voltage. Without that, 196.857 becomes meaningless. So I don't believe that a common law right has been supplanted, Your Honor. All that has occurred here is that the legislature has determined that we need some experts here to determine what is harmful stray voltage. We cannot have a plaintiff producing experts in X case, Y case, Z case, and have each jury determine, well, in this case, 0.3 milliampere did not harm the cows, but over here, 0.1 milliampere did. It's impossible to regulate this area unless the PSC can establish a harm threshold. And plaintiffs are certainly free to sue utilities if they can establish that harm threshold has been crossed by a utility.
In talking about harm threshold, it sounds a lot to me like standard of care. And yet you have consistently said during arguments, this isn't a negligence, this isn't a standard of care case, this is a causation. But that's difficult for me because they seem to really morph into one another. And indeed, I think the way that you've postulated the issue is phrasing it in terms of causal negligence. But in your argument today, you're emphasizing, not this is just causation. We're not talking about standard of care. Am I missing?
Well, I'm saying, Your Honor, these findings do not supplant the common law standard of care. A utility still has a duty to exercise reasonable care to ensure that its conduct does not harm another. Part of the standard of care is foreseeability. And so there is, as you put it, some morphing in that because in order to establish foreseeability, which is a burden that's upon the plaintiff in this case, one would have to say that it's foreseeable to a utility that if its electrical system is putting out 0.1 milliamperes at cow contact, that harm could occur. So I think it's very unlikely that a jury could find or that a trial court would sustain a jury finding where there is such a low output of stray voltage because it would not be foreseeable that that would cause harm. So in that respect, it is a standard of care. However, what the PSC has done again here is has unequivocally stated that in order to establish that a current has caused harm to a plaintiff's cow, it has to rise to a certain level. And that level is the 2 milliampere standard.
So you're saying, and you keep on saying, as a matter of law, this is not harmful stray voltage. That's what you're saying.
That is correct. That's exactly right, Your Honor.
But
it is.
Conceptually, I'm just not sure where that statement properly falls, if it properly falls under standard of care or if it properly falls under causation.
Well, as I say, I think there is an infusion. I mean, there's no doubt that because foreseeability is an element of the standard of care, that would certainly be very material and could be controlling as to what is foreseeable in a given situation. But let's assume, for example, that a reading of 0.9 milliamperes should cause a utility to say, wait a minute, we're getting pretty close to the 1 milliampere threshold. We better take some action to counteract that. And assuming that the plaintiff then is able to show that this is not strict liability, the plaintiff, even if the plaintiff can show that there's 2 milliamperes of current at cow contact, still would have to establish negligence on the part of the utility. A utility is not absolutely liable simply because we get a reading of 2 milliamperes. So in that context, you still have to show negligence. And I believe if a jury were convinced that a utility should have taken some action when it got readings near the 1 milliampere threshold, a jury may very well find that that constitutes negligent conduct, the failure to act. And that if had the utility acted, it would have prevented the subsequent reading of 2 milliamperes, and you would have a recovery in that case.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Your time is up. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Laufenberg.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court. Mr. Lawrence and I decided to divide our argument along the lines of my opportunity to address the issues addressed exclusively by Mr. Armstrong, as it turns out, what is the basis and whether there's an adequate basis in fact or law for the jury's finding which supports the verdict and the judgment which was entered against WEPCO in this case. Mr. Lawrence is planning to address the issue of the injunctive relief that was granted by Judge Kirk and which is also challenged on this appeal. I should point out that the Hoffman family is present in court in this matter. It is an opportunity to see how justice works in the state of Wisconsin. I believe that the arguments that have been made concerning the significance of the PSC findings and orders is nothing more than trying to create a legal issue in the guise, which is really a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence in this case. And it's raised for the first time on appeal. We've made a waiver argument in the Court of Appeals. We've reasserted that argument in our brief on this appeal. And I think if time were taken to go back through the trial court record, there was never an assertion made at the trial court, either on motions in limine, at the close of the plaintiff's case, or even on motions after verdict, that the PSC findings and orders found in docket 115 constitute the exclusive basis for a jury determination of liability in a stray voltage case. That argument is made for the first time on this appeal. There were arguments made at the trial court level that WEPCO should not be found to have been negligent as a matter of law because they supposedly complied with PSC findings and orders. That's a different issue. It's not the issue which is sought to be raised here, which I think Justice Babbage articulated well, and that is whether the PSC was delegated the authority to effectively supplant common law remedies of nuisance and negligence to protect a farmer's property rights. The legal issue which we think is being sought to be raised here is whether the legislature authorized the Public Service Commission to limit the right of farm owners to enforce their property rights in civil litigation. We have no quarrel with public service regulations, commission regulations. That's within their regulatory right with regard to public utilities within the scope of their regulatory authority. And certainly, public utilities, as, including WEPCO, have an obligation to keep one eye on the regulatory scheme that affects them and to comply with that scheme. But as has been the law consistently in this state, as exemplified by Kemp and other cases, regulatory rulings and standards do not establish the exclusive scope of a utility's common law obligations to exercise reasonable care and not interfere with the reasonable use of property for those people that they affect.
Was the argument here, just so we've talked about common law, we've talked about the PSC regulation, was the argument here, I think it was made, just so I'm on the same track here, that WEPCO should have done something more than they did on this particular farm?
Absolutely.
Okay. Just so that seemed, and the jury heard that argument.
Absolutely. The jury heard all there was to say about the PSC regulatory rulings and findings. It also heard, by the way, that the PSC findings and orders in dockets 106 and 115 addressed only one special category of stray voltage. And that's that stray voltage that results from the interconnection between the primary neutral of the utility and the secondary neutral or grounding system on the farm. That's what docket 115 and 106 are addressed to. That was the subject matter of those hearings, and I'll talk a bit about why I say that. That the PSC was attempting to address. It expressly did not address and set standards of measurement or threshold levels for the effects of ground currents and earth currents. And the substantial evidence in this case related to ground currents and earth currents emanating from something that we haven't heard WEPCO discuss at all in its argument here today or mention in its brief, and that is a deteriorating underground bare concentric neutral distribution line that serviced the Hoffman farm. This is a line which, as the evidence shows as outlined in our brief, was installed in the late 70s, and as early as the mid-80s, WEPCO's engineers had determined that the bare concentric neutral, which is just a piece of wire that's wrapped around the insulating substance that protects the charged wires, the current-carrying wires, and it's a return path for current because electricity to work needs a circuit, and the primary neutral provides part of that circuit, that these primary neutrals on these underground lines were corroding. And when they corroded, according to the engineering report that was discovered in preparing for trial in this case, the neutrals could carry less return current. And when they carry less return current, the return current has to get back to the substation by other paths.
Through the earth. And the applications engineers, when they were telling their superiors at WEPCO about this problem with rapidly corroding bare concentric neutrals, were saying, look, this will cause stray current problems. And you have a choice. You can either remove all of these lines and replace them with jacketed neutrals or overhead systems, or you can try to monitor them to see whether or not they, in a given location, the lines are creating stray current problems through the earth. This was an earth current case primarily because in 1996 on the Hoffman farm, the interconnection between the primary neutral of the utility system and the secondary neutral of the farm was separated. It was broken by an isolation transformer. Unfortunately, as the jury heard, there was no significant change in dairy herd health or dairy milk production or reproductive health on the Hoffman farm. And in fact, several other attempts were made to try to intercept the earth current coming from the WEPCO line through the Hoffman property. And as the court will see when reading the statement of facts, there was a ground ring put in on which high levels of current were measured whenever the WEPCO system was energized and loaded, proving, according to the plaintiff's experts and accepted by the jury, that high levels of current were in fact accessing the Hoffman Dairy facility through earth pathways because of a deteriorated neutral, which WEPCO no longer uses. When they install underground lines, they install jacketed neutrals, but which they refuse nonetheless to remove from the Hoffman property. So this is primarily an earth current case. And the question we have here, as sought to be asserted as a question of law, is whether the legislature intended to delegate to the Public Service Commission some authority to modify the common law rights that are established by negligence and nuisance law and establish criteria by which farmers are able to prove that they've been damaged by electrical problems on their farm. We think this argument has to be rejected. First, as the court has already pointed out, the Public Service Commission has only those powers expressly conferred or necessarily implied by the statutes under which it operates. That's the Kimberly-Clark case, 110 with second 455. There is absolutely nothing in what Mr. Armstrong suggests is the authorizing statute, 196.857, which supports the assertion that the legislature intended that the PSC address the issue of civil liability in any way, shape, or form. If you read that statute, which is set forth in our brief, it uses very general terms like investigate, quote, provide technical assistance, quote, recommend solutions, end quote, quote, evaluate effectiveness, end quote, of technical assistance.
Mr. Armstrong agrees with that. He says the power comes under 196.26 and 196.28.
As I understand those statutes simply are authorizing statutes to conduct hearings within the scope of the PSC's regulatory authority. And as I've said, we don't quarrel with the PSC's authority to regulate utilities. What we quarrel with is the proposition that the legislature somehow granted to the PSC in this area of stray voltage the authority to change common law remedies or to limit common law remedies.
But can they regulate the utilities as to two or one?
Absolutely. That's no different in my view. I keep hearing that this is not a standard of conduct, rather it's a standard of causation. I don't see a difference between the standard that the regulation that's enacted in this case, if you want to call it that, it's in the form of finding an order, and the finding an order or regulation that was present in the Kemp case, which set a minimum height of a distance above the ground that utility lines are required to be placed. That's not a conduct regulation. It's a fine. If you find a utility line below that level, it infers conduct in violation of the regulatory scheme. Same thing here. If you find current levels by cow contact test in the particular kind of stray voltage that 106 and 115 were designed to address or were intended to address, then you have an inference of conduct below the accepted regulatory scheme. That's all it is, and it's no different than the situation that existed in Kemp, in Schultz, in Kearns, in Kurz, and all the other cases cited in the brief, where this court has stated time and time again that a regulatory agency's regulation, while evidence of due care, is not the exclusive measure of due care in a given case. And in this case, as I pointed out, WEPCO had every opportunity to present the PSC findings and orders to the jury for its consideration, along with other evidence, and argue that it could not and should not be found liable because it had not made a finding of current levels at cow contact above the level of concern. The jury rejected it, as the jury rejected that argument in the Kemp case, where the evidence was, in that particular location, under those particular circumstances, compliance with the minimum height requirements of the regulation concerning the placement of power lines was not enough. It did not comply with the standard of care.
What is the evidence that deteriorating cables cause traditional stray voltage.
We don't claim it caused traditional stray voltage, and that was the problem and is the problem with all of WEPCO's argument in this case. There was evidence that there was current flow, significant current flow through the facilities, through the Hoffman facilities. There is in docket 108, as I probably should point to, this is an electrical phenomenon, earth current, which was simply not addressed in docket 106 and 115. For example, in docket 108, at page 1 of that order, page 71 of the appellant's appendix, the Public Service Commission pointed out that in docket 106, it had focused on 60 hertz alternating currents, traditional so-called traditional stray voltage, and whereas the 108 hearing, which was conducted in and led up to an order dated June 22, 1995, was specifically convened to address the issue of direct currents, electromagnetic fields, and ground or earth currents. And the reason the commission opened that investigation, as it pointed out at page 3, page 4 of the order and findings, page 74 of the appellant's appendix, the evidence shows that some farmers are experiencing serious problems operating their dairy farms. The cause of those problems, however, cannot be determined based on this record. Public witnesses and expert witnesses provide anecdotal testimony about damage to dairy animals, reduced production, and various behavioral problems. During the hearing, some public witnesses testified that they believe the adverse symptoms exhibited by their dairy livestock were caused by electrical problems associated with the power supplier even after, quote, stray voltage concerns had been addressed. And on the record before it at that time, the Public Service Commission said, we do not have enough evidence to enter additional findings and orders concerning ground currents.
Well, let me ask, did WEPCO get notice of these problems before 1995?
Absolutely. The problems existed on the Hoffman farm in the early 90s. They conducted their first formal stray voltage investigation in 95. And at the time of that investigation, the record shows that one of the plaintiff's consultants, Dr. Andrew Johnson, a well-respected state veterinarian, was on the farm that day conducting his own evaluation. And the record shows that the applications engineer conducting the traditional stray voltage testing for Wisconsin Electric Power Company did the so-called cow contact evaluation in the milking parlor, which had in place an what is called an equipotential plane. And yes, these cases are incredibly fact-specific, but that's why this is a challenge to sufficiency of evidence, not a legal issue. Equipotential planes, when they're hooked up, equalize the potential, the gradient potential between different contact points. And the testimony showed that the applications engineer who did the testing knew full well when he did his traditional cow contact testing in the parlor, he wouldn't find a differential. Because there can't be when everything's tied together has an equal potential electrically. At that time, however, Dr. Johnson said in his report of his interaction with the WEPCO representatives that he understood that they would be conducting an evaluation for ground currents or earth currents elsewhere on the property, particularly in a freestall facility where the cows spent most of their time, where they were fed and watered. That investigation was never conducted. In addition, they had notice of potential problems with earth currents, as I pointed out before, because of the evaluation of the problems they'd been having with their underground bare concentric neutral lines back in the early and the mid-80s when their engineers sent memos to the staff confirming that these lines were corroding and had less of a life expectancy than had been expected. So there was plenty of notice to Wisconsin Electric Power Company that they had a condition on that property which was producing non-traditional stray voltage, yet chose not to conduct any investigation, yet chose not to remove the line, yet chose not to even test the line a second time, despite requests from the Hoffmans to do so, until it was done at the Hoffmans' request a month before, so before trial. And that testing, according to the plaintiff's experts, showed continued and increasing deterioration of that bare concentric neutral, responsible for sending additional utility current through the livestock facilities. And yes, the plaintiff's experts said that we cannot identify by known methods how this current, this earth current that we know is flowing through the Hoffman facility, is physiologically affecting these animals. There is no, the stray volt, the cow contact test does not allow us to do that with earth currents. But we believe, based upon all of the evidence that exists on this farm, including the evidence of current we found and the other experts' evidence that there was no other reasonable explanation for the problems the Hoffmans were consistently having. Their farm vet, their farm nutritionist, had looked at and excluded all of the other potential causes of all these consistent and persistent animal health and production problems.
Just a question. Just understanding, my last question was on the what WEBCO did, but at trial, if I understand in reading, there was an agreement, at least you agreed that there had to be, or you did not agree there had to be cow contacts. In other words, what position did you take at trial on that? You, if I make myself understood, we're talking about earth currents, we're talking about what WEBCO could or could not have done. That was argued to the jury. Cow contacts were also argued to the jury.
Yes, in fact, there was evidence of cow contact. I differ with Mr. Armstrong, because I understand because at a disadvantage because he didn't participate in the month-long trial that we had in this case, but Professor Bodman did make cow contact measurements.
But
they were not under the level of concern. The defense argued that they were made under circumstances which were inconsistent with the way the PSC claims they should be made, and that's just not the case. The PSC orders and findings say, yes, you can use a range of resistors in your circuit to duplicate the cow, ranging from 350 to 590, I think was the range set forth in docket 115. Professor Bodman got milliamp readings above the level of concern at the waterer in the freestall on two occasions under varying load conditions using resistors of 350 and 499, well within the range of the resistors suggested by the Public Service Commission in docket 115 and 106. So there's no question that there was evidence of cow contact voltages. The problem that existed, Justice Wilcox, was that by the time Professor Bodman was on the farm, the Hoffmans had made a number of changes on the farm side of the electrical system in an attempt to deal with this problem that they were having with their animals. They had changed the on-farm wiring. They had disconnected the equipotential planes because there was consistent evidence from the testimony of the plaintiff's experts and from the literature that was admitted at trial that equipotential planes exacerbate earth current problems on farms where earth current problems exist. They may be helpful with traditional stray voltage cow contact, primary neutral to secondary neutral type of stray voltage issues, but they exacerbate and they become effectively a sewer for current flow if there is an earth current problem from the utility system, which existed in this case. So that change had been made. In addition, there had been a ground ring that had been put in surrounding the entire dairy facility intended to intercept these stray currents, and attempts were made to cut the ground ring to try to reconfigure the farm as close as possible to what it was before these significant changes were made by the Hoffmans on the advice of their various consultants. And when those changes were made, Professor Bodman found under varying load conditions, current flow at cow contact at a waterer in the freestall barn above the PSC's level of concern for traditional stray voltage. And that was done under circumstances where the primary neutral and the farm secondary neutral were reconnected to try to reestablish the situation that the Public Service Commission was addressing when it enacted Docket 106.
Thank you, Mr. Lumpenberg. Any other questions?
Thank you,
Council. Mr. Lawrence?
Thank you, Chief Justice. To finish a thought in response to one of Justice Prosser's questions in terms of credible evidence supporting this verdict, back in the 1980s and even late 70s when this subject was initially being investigated at places like universities, the University of Minnesota was one of the early institutions that addressed it. And by the mid-1980s, they had established what they felt was a reasonable level of voltage on the barn steel that in the areas where cows can contact it, below which problems are not likely to occur, but it was measured from the barn steel out to a reference rod, not 6 feet away the length of a cow, but maybe 50 feet away to a rod outside. And that's particularly useful measurement in getting at earth currents, or getting some idea of the quantity of the current flowing through the facility. You can't put an ammeter with a clamp, you know, around the earth to measure the current in it. And those Minnesota publications, all of which are in evidence, indicate that a reasonable goal for farms needing correction is to keep that voltage level below 0.35 volts. Measured on this farm, after all the electrical changes had been made to eliminate any even possible contribution from the farm system by the farm's electricians, that level was about 10 times what Minnesota recommended back in the 80s. Now, the PSC decided not to adopt that test for regulatory purposes, triggering utility action. The PSC recommends that that sort of test be done, but they don't trigger the utility's obligation to act upon that test. But there is ample credible evidence that there is current coming from the utility system through this farm, that there was and is, that causes problems with cows. Reliance on that test, we would submit, and this is discussed at some length in the Farm Bureau brief in this case, is consistent with the PSC's orders. In Docket 106, for example, at pages 10 and 11, it's pages 22 and 23 of the appellant's appendix, where the PSC announces, much contrary to its amicus brief in this case, something that sounds sort of like a common law standard. And there they say, quote, by describing these basic screening measurement tests, the commission is not saying that further investigation is not warranted if the basic tests do not indicate a problem. There is no substitute for good judgment based upon an observation of the actual behavior of the animals and the consideration of other variables, including non-electrical factors. The commission expects that additional efforts beyond the basic screening tests will be pursued when those observations justify such further action, end quote. And I think that's exactly what we proved up in this case. We don't believe the PSC standards are controlling as a matter of law, but PSC is essentially urging a standard that sounds an awful lot like a common law negligence standard. Now, in addition to the monetary relief, all of which related to damages occurring to this operation prior to trial, there were no damages awarded for a permanent nuisance because our proof indicated the nuisance was eminently abatable by replacing the deteriorating underground system with a different type of system for a short distance, basically from Highway 45 about 7/10 of a mile west of the Hoffman Farm, including about three or four customers. So we did not prove up a loss of value of the farm. The trial court, motions after verdict, granted such equitable relief. This relief was first requested in a letter to WEPCO in March of 99, well over a year before trial. WEPCO declined to do anything, and a motion was brought to the trial court for equitable relief in the form of an injunction in June of 1999, almost the year before the May 2000 trial. The trial supported by competent expert testimony, opposed by Wisconsin Electric, of course. The trial court, Judge Kirk, refused to address the issue on the merits at that point due to concerns of judicial economy, potentially inconsistent rulings between an equitable determination made by the court and a legal one made by the jury, but agreed to take it up after the verdict, which is what happened in this case. Judge Kirk found, and upon motions after verdict, the nuisance was continuing and that the Hoffmans were very likely to go out of business if injunctive relief was not granted, and he ordered the installation of a system serving the farm, overhead instead of underground, removal of the deteriorated bare concentric neutral, and the use of what's known as a delta system, which, by way of perhaps poor analogy, is sort of like a 240-volt appliance in your house. The energy is being taken from two hot conductors instead of a hot and a neutral, which is one of a couple of different methods to get the current out of the ground, given the propensity of what goes current to get into the Hoffman facilities. That was ordered upon motions after. WEPCO proposed an alternative. Did not want to install the Delta system. Judge Kirk stayed that order pending appeal, and here we are. The Hoffman's, WEPCO's alternative, which was installed, didn't work, frankly. The current levels, especially impulse current, which is something the PSC has considered very little either, did not appreciably change, though the steady-state current did. And the Hoffmans have sold their herd. However, they retain the facilities and have the intention of reestablishing a herd there if this problem is solved. All of that happened after trial, so it's not part of the record except in some post.
Is the ungrounded counsel, is the system that the trial judge ordered in the abatement order, the ungrounded above ground delta system, illegal?
No, it's not. And the PSC has said in its amicus filings in this case that it is. No party argued that at trial. Counsel and engineering witnesses for Wisconsin Electric conceded that ungrounded systems are permitted by code, and there's substantial, credible testimony that they are used by, well, at least a couple of major utilities in this country governed by substantially the same code, the National Electrical Safety Code. Wisconsin makes some modifications, true, but the applicable sections, 96B in particular, are no different. The PSC's point in its amicus brief that a system, a delta system derived from a multiple grounded system is illegal would be true if you did not place a transformer where you derive the delta system or the ungrounded system. And in fact, the attachments to their brief establish that. It's between transformations that the neutrals have to be carried through in multiple grounded systems. So that issue first came up in an amicus brief on this appeal, unfortunately. There's been some record made on it. It wasn't focused on because nobody was arguing that they were illegal. WEPCO certainly contended they were undesirable, didn't want to put them in, that we'd be going backwards and all that sort of thing if we did that. But there was no argument they were illegal.
Would you agree if it's illegal and it violates the electrical code that the trial court would have abused its discretion in ordering it?
If that were the case, yes, I would agree, Chief Justice, but we obviously disagree with the predicate, and no party argued that.
Argued it in the trial
court? In the trial court, correct.
No one told the judge can't do it because of the electrical code?
No. There was an affidavit of Mr. Cook filed by the PSC with the trial court upon motions after verdict. That doesn't say that directly, I don't think, but it kind of dances around the subject. No party to the litigation argued that. The trial judge refused to consider these post-trial submissions. Mr. Cook of the PSC, who's an electrician, was on WEPCO's witness list. They chose not to call him at trial for whatever set of reasons. He's never been subject to cross-examination in this case.
Well, the trial judge disallowed any evidentiary proceedings on the post-judgment motions, right?
That's true. Nobody, in fact, nobody asked for an evidentiary hearing, I don't believe, at any time. I mean, the case on the equitable issues, the case had been tried, the equitable issues had been raised nearly a year before trial. There was a rather thorough record made on the different types of electrical distribution systems, their advantages, their disadvantages, and so forth, in front of the jury, also for the trial judge's consideration on the equitable issues. So, but there wasn't another hearing after the jury verdict. That's true. Another evidentiary hearing after the jury verdict.
And you have conceded that without this additional transformer, this would be illegal.
Yes. If you didn't put a transformer at the corner of Highway 45 and simply took the two hot wires off the multiple grounded system out there without bringing the neutral along and no transformation, yes, it would be illegal.
And is the transformer a part of the trial judge's abatement order?
Not specifically, but the abatement order specifies a delta system, and system by the definitions of electrical engineering implies that there's a transformation. So, and not specifically, that's true. But, you know, I don't think anybody's arguing what the definition of an electrical distribution system is. There is a standard definition, not in the code, but in the IEEE.
We have an amicus from the PSC and from the Electrical Workers Union saying we can't install this system that the trial judge ordered. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's enough to make a court sit up and take notice.
Sure, and understandably so. However, if that's true, I would submit to the court that most of the eastern half of lower Michigan and a large part of rural California would have burned up by now, because they all use such systems. And at least the Michigan people are subject to the substantially the same electric code. California has its own. It's the only state that does.
Do you think that we should – I'm troubled by the information we received and the fact that at least we ought to have something consistent with our own electrical code. Right now, as I understand it, even though you're saying other states have it, I'm obviously not an electrical expert. You try to become, as you listen to counsel or to the experts, but what would be wrong with this court at least considering or having an abatement that's consistent with the Wisconsin electrical code?
Oh, if this court, we have no problem with this court remanding the matter to Judge Kirk with directions to somehow make sure that his abatement order is consistent with the code. We think it is. I mean, but we're not trying that matter here today. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but as Justice Sykes indicated, as you read the amicus, I do get that impression that when they use words like dangerous, it's an assumption that that's not the case.
True. I mean, the system, we contend the system ordered is permitted by code. Some of the amicus say otherwise. Unfortunately, the code issue was never raised in the trial court.
You don't think the briefs can stand as evidence? Is that it?
Oh, boy, I hope.
Is that your position?
I hope we're not trying cases by on paper at this level, Chief Justice. I don't think they should. On the other hand, if we can do it expeditiously without retrying this whole lawsuit, which is what Judge Kirk was concerned about when he required a system that did not use the earth as part of the circuit. And he said that at page, I think it's 57 of the June 29th, 2000 hearing on motions after verdict. Based upon Wisconsin Electric's consistent refusal to do anything to address this problem, relying on the PSC Cal Contact Protocol.
So if we affirmed this abatement order and added the words subject to them conforming to the electrical code, that would satisfy you.
Oh, sure.
I used the word dangerous. I'm sorry. It was hazardous.
And it's interesting, Justice. The transmission lines, the high voltage lines in this state are generally ones that are not multiple grounded like distribution are. So those are the systems out there in this state that are. But there are other places where this kind of distribution system has been used ever since rural electrification. But that's subject for another court, I think.
If I could just turn your attention to page 10 while we're on the Public Service Commission brief. It says, in addition to testimony about current flowing through the cows, much of the testimony in this case described other electrical phenomena, electric fields, magnetic fields, and current passing through the earth instead of the cow that exists in a dairy environment. Okay. However, three of plaintiff's key experts conceded that the current must actually have passed through the Hoffman's cows to cause harm, not that these other phenomena could by themselves adversely affect the cows.
I think at least with respect to two of those three experts, I think they correctly characterized their testimony.
Then what was the evidence that showed that these other electrical phenomena would cause this problem?
Well, number one, there are step potentials and there is current passing through a cow even at levels lower than the PSC contends. Whether a cow is exposed occasionally, continuously, or, you know, in the case of earth grounds such as this, all the time, there are virtually infinite number of variables. And some of the data, which is pointed out to the jury at some of the earth current studies that even WEPCO introduced, suggest that levels of earth current at low electric usage, the minimum levels, not the maximum levels, have a lot to do with what's going on here. That's the Minnesota Science Advisor study that Mr. Armstrong referenced. The problem with the count-to-contact procedure is it just doesn't reflect reality, and there was a lot of testimony received on that. If it did, installation of the equipotential planes Mr. Loffenberg was talking about in cattle housing facilities would solve the problem. But if there's current flowing on them any appreciable amount of time, as opposed to just when there's a fault or a short circuit condition, they don't. The cows get worse, even though the cow contact voltages go down.
And there was evidence so stated.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There are nine separate boxes of evidence in this case.
I'm sorry?
I said there are nine, according to this note, separate boxes containing the transcripts.
It was a month-long trial. We think there is substantial, credible evidence to support everything the trial judge did. If the court has concerns about the abatement order that the court thinks based upon the amicus filings, the trial court should consider further. I'm sure Judge Kirk won't be happy to see us, but he will find an expeditious way to do it. And we can handle that. But remember, the folks that were making these assertions, or at least one of them from the PSC, was on the witness list, and they never brought them to be cross-examined.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Mr. Armstrong.
Your Honor, I was unable to address the injunction issue, and our brief does address that beginning at page 59. There was no finding by the jury or the trial court in this case that the nuisance could not have been remedied by either repairing the existing underground line, installing a new underground line, installing an overhead system that's multi-grounded, which, under the evidence we presented to the court, each of those systems posed less risk, whether it violated the electrical code or not. The simple fact is there is no justification for the court's ordering a specific form of electrical system in this case. The authorities that we've cited in our brief all stand for the proposition that unless a specific system is necessary to cure the nuisance, the defendant is to be permitted to cure the nuisance in a manner it sees fit. And in this case, again, there is absolutely no evidence of any need for a delta system such as ordered by the trial court. And there are no findings of fact to support it. And therefore, apart from the issue of whether the system ordered violates the electrical code, we believe that the court exceeded its discretionary authority in specifying this type of system. With respect to earth currents, Your Honor, I just want to point out that the PSC has addressed the subject of earth currents. I think in my presentation I made it fairly clear, I think, that the PSC has affirmed all of its findings in dockets 106 and 115, and that is that current has to pass through a cow in order to harm the cow. And that has been confirmed by PSC staff, and I'm reading from page 267 of our appendix. This is discussing earth currents. If any earth current is going to affect animals on farms, it will have to be manifested as a step potential measurable via a special cow contact setup. The same level of concern applies to this measurement, i.e. earth current, as to any measurement at cow contact points inside a barn. The fact is the PSC has stated unequivocally that in order to determine whether there's any harm occurring to a cow from so-called earth currents, the only way to make that determination is by a cow contact setup, and that the same threshold applies. None of the measurements in this case came anywhere near the 2 milliampere standard. With respect to Mr. Bodman, we have addressed his testimony in our reply brief, I believe at pages 1 through 3, and that evidence in this record discloses that Mr. Bodman departed radically from the cow contact test protocol in order to obtain his two readings, which he claimed exceeded the 1 milliampere level of concern. So the PSC has held that regardless of whether we're talking about earth current or about traditional stray voltage, current has to pass through the cow in order to harm the cow. We have to determine how much current is accessing the cow by a cow contact test protocol, which is prescribed, and that the 2 milliampere standard is intact. To accept anything else, again, would totally eliminate all of the procedures and findings in dockets 106 and 115, because what it would mean is it doesn't matter what your cow contact test shows. A plaintiff would always be able to say, oh, it's not traditional stray voltage that's causing the problem. It's earth currents that are causing the problem that are getting into the cow's atmosphere. With respect to the Kemp case, again, I think if the PSC and Kemp had informed utilities that if you place your power lines at 26 feet or 10 feet or 12 feet, no injury to anyone could occur, that would be more like what's happened in this case. The PSC has told utilities that unless 2 milliamperes of current are reaching the cow, a cow cannot be harmed. We maintain that the PSC is authorized under 196.857 to do exactly that. Otherwise, it really can't regulate stray voltage. In the cases that we've cited, this court has said, if we concede that if the commission has directed, in this case, a crossing to be regarded to be guarded in a particular manner, and the railroad has done as directed, it is not required to go farther to satisfy a jury's idea of adequate protection. That's the Schulz case. The same thing was stated in the Thompson case. Thus, when an order of the commission is claimed to be applicable, the sole question is whether the structure conforms to the order. If it does, the jury may not substitute its conclusions as to its safety for those of the body vested by statute with the power to determine this matter. So again, the jury in this case is not free to override what the PSC has found after evidentiary hearings under 227, that a certain level of stray voltage is necessary in order to negatively impact a cow.
I don't think I understand. I know I don't understand how you test non-traditional stray voltage.
Well, Your Honor, there is no test. I mean, the plaintiff's experts admitted we don't know how to test it. We don't know what magnitude could affect cows. All we can do is look at the cow, and if we believe we've eliminated non-electrical causes, it must be these so-called earth currents or non-traditional stray voltage. The plaintiff's experts admit that utilities are at a total loss. I mean, the utilities cannot ever determine how much of this so-called non-traditional stray voltage is in the cow's environment or what level of voltage would be necessary to impact the cow. That's why acceptance of that proposition totally nullifies everything the PSC has done in dockets 106 and 115. That's why it totally undermines the statute, the legislative declaration and direction to the PSC to regulate stray voltage Stray voltage will not be regulated if one accepts the proposition that there's something else out there that's harming cows. And these stray voltage, the traditional stray voltage tests, are this the tip of the iceberg, as one of plaintiff's experts testified. We are back to square one in this state, and it's going to be up to a jury in each case to determine whether some kind of voltage, no matter what we call it, is negatively impacting cows. And that makes regulation of stray voltage in this state impossible. And so there is no test. There is no test at all to determine, and the plaintiff's experts admitted it. We don't know how to test it. We don't know what quantities harm cows. We can't tell what kind, what number, what quantity is in the cow's environment. All we can do is look at the cow and try to rule out other causes. So it's as if we had no 196.857. It's as if we had no findings of fact by the PSC in dockets 106 and 115. They become meaningless. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Thank you, Mr. Lautenberg and Mr. Lawrence, for your cogent arguments in 002703.